Go ahead, Terry.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the NLA Courtroom Observers Conference call for September 6, 2017. If anybody has anything to report, please go ahead, unless Robert wants to say a few words first.
Well, I'm going to. I'm expecting Ollie to come on and say a few words also about what he does in the courtroom as an observer. But I, I've been harping on looking sharp as a courtroom observer and making sure that you have a badge on and having a clipboard and a pad, something to write with, and looking like you belong and taking some good notes and everything. Well, something that I've been neglecting, and I think most people are thinking that we're going in as a friend of the defendant, and yes, we might be. However, when we're in there as a courtroom observer, we are neutral. We're not on the, we don't go in there thinking how bad the court is, how corrupt it is, how shameful, and how good the defendant is. Because when you do that kind of thing, you tend to, you lose some of the credibility in your writing. You should go in there as a neutral participant to write a report on what you observed and heard. And I think probably by doing that, you are sounding more credible in your writing, and you're actually doing the defendant a bigger favor when you do that. What they need is the absolute truth without flowering. And to be absolutely at your best, you need to be neutral. Let the court prove to you that they're corrupt. But listen to both sides. Be the neutral observer and write what you're seeing. And I think that's important. And I doubt that anybody has even talked about that in the past, but it was something that came to me, just kind of slapped me in the head, and I thought, yeah, that's, I think that's right. You see, I don't know everything. But I look at everything and I study everything and I come to conclusions of how things should be if we're absolutely being honest with each other. And that's the way we need to be. We have to be that neutral party that's being honest in what we say and what we write and how we live. So, I know we had a plan for tonight. Some of it has fallen apart. However, we do have somebody that may have some words to put out. I'm looking for them. Where'd he go? I know he was here a few minutes ago. How do you pronounce his name? Malgors?
I am Val. I'm from Florida.
Oh, yes. You and you and Nebraska Jan.
Yeah, last was week I proposed something what it's called Mika's brief, and I look at the. I tried to do a little discovery in the past week, and there was another person, some lady from somewhere, you said Lambert, Nebraska, probably, right? So that's what I find out. Amica's brief is the papers which don't take the either side. It's like kind of independent of outlook, and it's very used in the appellate courts and used in the Supreme Courts, and also can be used in any court level. And what I found, let me read a few things. For example, in Supreme Court, 83% clerks reported that they look at every single amicus brief filed. A former law clerk revealed that after 6 months of experience, she could read amicus brief in 60 seconds and could make the judgment as the usefulness and dispose of them. In other words, on that level, they take a look at the amicus brief. And at that level, on Supreme Court, most of the time the brief is written by the professional attorney. And I would think the same thing apply to the appellate courts. I don't know about any lower courts. And of course, hiring an attorney, it costs you money. For example, in Supreme Court, each judge have 30 attorneys as the helpers. So, you know, that thing could be taken more seriously. Another thing is there is even chair of International Association of Defense Counsels, Amica Briefs Curari Committee. And there is the name Mary-Christine Sangalia, who is the chair of that international association. So, you know, that's not many of us probably were familiar with. There is also another website. I found a template how to write amicus brief. And the number one rules is that amicus brief, like I said earlier, this attorney phrased this me too brief. In other words, that you shouldn't put what's already in the brief, put it by the plaintiff. And basically, amicus brief, there's the headline, what is the court, docket number, who is the plaintiff, who is the defendant. And then you put the court cases on the top, and after you put 3, 4, 5 court cases, and after that you make the argument for each court cases which you mention in the brief. You try to explain it. So that's the general theory, how it works. And idea was to write an individual amicus brief, and as many as possible. We have such a great paperwork done by John in the what they call it, memorandums of law. You know, you can pick one case and you just write a few words on it independently and send it to him, to the court. But first we have to know the case number and who is who involved with. And so, and also, I'm not remember. Actually, I remember, but I'm kind of disregarding that. You must even inform the both sides that you're going to write the amicus brief. In our case, I wouldn't even bother with that because we don't know if they're going to toss it away or they're going to look at it. And but at least it's something new, and at least it's every one of us could express ourselves. And help those guys over there, you know, by putting this in the mail and, you know, write it to the court. Since I am here, I also going to mention something else, which is not associated with the amica brief, but it's found in Article 6 of Bill of Rights. And that is the language I'm going to read from there. To be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor. This is another thing. You know, the way I am planning, I would write, for example, a letter that I am the witness and I haven't been injured by those defendants, neither by physically or by any property. So that's what I would do. It was very simple paper. So I'm finished, and that's what I find out, and if somebody else want to add to it.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Does anybody have any comments? Everybody in agreement with that? Is Ollie here? Wow. A deafening response.
Okay, Robert. I am Val. I may continue a little bit.
Okay.
I'm taking the civic course, and I am with the Thornton right now, and I'm looking for his material. And there is, some people have the question in the past, what is the difference between legal and lawful? And I'm going to quote the Thornton. He said the legal means statutory form or fiction, which is the fiction. Lawful means substance and common law. So this, there is two distinctions, what legal means and two distinctions what lawful means. And that's, for me, this solidified the difference, and I will remember.
Well,
and one more thing, that's going to be the common law is the public opinion, in other words, people opinion, not the case law, which attorneys falsely quote. And one more thing, when you are, and I am kind of interesting, because some of these defendants in Nevada, they are representing themselves, and Thornton talk about the arraignment, which is first time you're in the court. Usually the court give you three options, guilty, not guilty, or no contender. Thornton says that you should demand that common law and court of record. And that is the brilliant approach. Attorney cannot demand that. You can demand it when you are representing yourself.
Here in the NLA, we don't give credibility to the fiction. And so, therefore, we don't make a distinction of the words in that sense, like legal and lawful. Now, why should there be a distinction? I mean, it is because they say there's a distinction. And if we go along with it, we are giving them credibility. So right in the beginning of a court case, you need to demand, you know, common law.
Court of record.
And a court of record, yes. And
I would like to just jump in there and say something that Richard Walbaum said to me.
Oh.
And he and I worked together on my case, the writ of habeas corpus, for, I don't know, 6-8 months. And he said to me, Marla, anything that you give me in statute law, no matter what it is, I'll find a constitutional law for it. Meaning, there's not much difference between this concept of what's right and what's wrong. You know, we all know that the court system that we have is non-functional, it's not just, it's not right, judges do whatever they want. But the underlying foundation of that, the statutes, there's nothing really wrong with those statutes. Okay, if you can parallel some statute violation that you have and correlate it to which constitutional law that is affected by it, you know, use the constitutional law. But I don't discount the statutes and throw them out because they're bogus or untrue or anything like that. And the same applies to the two words. If you're going to define something as lawful, unlawful, legal, illegal, I mean, they're just terms. You know,
well, they are just terms.
Yeah, that's
however. It. However, we will not give credibility by recognizing.
Sure, you're not going to recognize the statutes either, but as soon as you interpret those statutes into something that is, you know, representative of a conspiracy against, you know, your rights to privacy or something like that, you know, just say it in different words. That's all you're doing. And,
well,
and of course, there's a whole lot of difference between procedure, you know, the... When you're in a statute court, you know, you have attorneys, you have a judge, and everybody can be biased or whatever. And if you're in a common law court, you know, the attorneys aren't there. If there is a judge, he's a common law judge, and he's not the person that, you know, puts his hand in the gavel down saying this is what it is, because the jury decides. You know, but there are a lot of cases in which, in statute law, where the jury decides. You know, you can request a 6-man jury, a 12-man jury. You know, so there's a lot of similarities, even in the procedural aspects between...
Well.
A court
there is, however, you are, you know, if it is repugnant to the Constitution, either procedurally or in words, then it is not legal. It is not
null and void.
It is actually null and void. If any part
right.
Of what
I understand
they do
that.
Or say
and
is repugnant.
Right. Right. Okay. So you can use the term null and void. We should throw away every single statute that exists. What for? When it backs up the Constitution.
We have a
you
Constitution.
You see that? You can correlate. you can correlate the two systems.
No.
Maybe you don't want to use the statute system, but it certainly serves a purpose to correlate it.
No.
Because if you wind up in left field and want to throw out every single statute and implement constitutional law overnight, it won't happen. If you take baby steps to incorporate certain things that can be translated into a common law court, someone is going to be willing to listen to you. Because that someone knows that our courts...
I'm gonna have to block you if you keep on. No. If it's not constitutional, it should not be done. And you don't.
I'm not saying that it's not constitutional. I'm not saying statute laws compared, let's say, the right to privacy. Okay, and someone in the statute law is in my case in a nursing home, I'm denied my right to privacy to go visit my mother in private. Okay, I know that it's against the Nursing Home Act of 1987. Where does that act come from? It comes from the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. That's where it comes from. Fine, they translated it and called it, you know, a statute. Okay, but it's coming directly from the Constitution under the Bill of Rights.
Well, there's a lot of confusion on what is...
Any comments, Robert? Every
yes.
statute should have the authority where they come from, and that would be much easier if people ask for. And another thing, if this system is broken, we know that. We have a system that most lawyers per capita in the world, and we have the biggest prison population of the world. As the 5% of the world population, we have a 25% prisoners population. So you know,
and that's because they're not following the Constitution.
Something is wrong. I do not have a time to read
50,000. They're not following statute law either.
Okay. That ends it. No more talk on. Let's get back to what we're here for. And that was courtroom observing. And what
Where
I'm telling
you... Where do you think courtroom observers take place? They take place in a statutory court. You don't have a constitutional court yet. You don't have one open. You have to know both. You need to know both. You need to know how they interact with one another. You need to know where every statute law comes from, if it comes from the Constitution. Or if it backs up into the Constitution, you need to know both.
You need to know the Constitution, and if it's repugnant to the Constitution, it needs to go in the notes you take. I don't care. I'm not gonna say that the courts are right. They're not. They're corrupt. But I live by the Constitution, and that is the only thing that I will follow in a courtroom. And if they don't follow it, then I'm going to report it. I'm going to put it on the affidavit.
Robert, this is Jim in New Mexico. I agree with you 110% on that. To start picking and choosing, well, we want to save some statutes. This one's okay, but it protects my rights here. Something like that is where you get into the swamp. And that's how
right.
they come up with this whole thing of, but it'll be for your best interest or your mother's best interest. That's how they've gotten us where they've gotten us.
That's
so
exactly.
I agree with you 110%, Mr. Robert.
Good. Thank you. Now, we teach common law through our civics course, and we teach the Constitution. And when we train somebody, it's to learn the and live by the Constitution and to abide by it. We do not recognize statutes as being the law. There are statutes that can be used as guidance for government agencies, not on the people. As a matter of fact, if we live by the Constitution, you know, we have God at the top, and then it's we the people, and then it's the Constitution, and then it is our elected officials. We are, as the people, we are actually above the Constitution. We wrote it, so we are above it. And our courts, our elected officials, would have you believe through statutes that it's just the opposite way, that we are not in charge, that they are. And so any law that is written, if any part of it is repugnant to the Constitution, it is all null and void, and we have no obligation to abide by it, and in fact, we should not abide by it. And if enough people understood that and refuse to abide by unconstitutional law, we would do away with the problem real quick. And since we are the power in this country, and the elected officials are subservient to we the people, they do not have the authority to make any law which controls we the people's behavior. And they're doing that, and they're getting by with it simply by we the people not understanding the Constitution, not knowing the Constitution at all, and we let them get by with it because we think they have that authority. They don't. And that's our biggest problem, is people have gotten away from the Constitution. People are not reading it and understanding it. I mean, it's not hard to read. There's a lot to understand. And the more you understand, the more it says. But we all need to get back to the Constitution and live by it, live our lives by it, treat others by it. And if we did that, we wouldn't have all these prisons filled up with all these people. I mean, part of the case with, you know, when somebody does something wrong, one of the things we should be doing, and in many cases we can do it without taking them to court, we can actually come up with a solution and take care of it without throwing all these people in jail. And that's, you know, it was mentioned that the 12-person jury, the 6-person jury, or the judge makes the decision. That's BS. The Constitution calls for a grand jury to, first of all, make a decision whether a case should go forward or whether it should be dropped. And if it goes forward, then it goes to a 12-person petit jury. Not a 6, not a 3, not the judge. The judge has no authority to make the decisions. The petit jury has the authority to look at the law and to look at the case and make a decision whether the person was arrested under a proper law, or and if they're found guilty, then it's the jury that decides what the punishment is, not the judge. They don't have that authority. But of course, we all believe that they do, and so we abide by it. And that's how they get by with everything. Just people just do not protect their rights. People do not know their rights. And when we go in as a courtroom observer, we need to know the Constitution. We should know what common law is. And we should judge what happens in that courtroom by the Constitution and common law. And first of all, when you look at it, if there is no victim, there is no crime. And there should be no arrest or a case to take to court. But once again, most people don't realize it. We let them get by with it. Well, as a courtroom observer, we can start ending that. We can write the affidavits in accordance with the Constitution. And we can get enough people starting to understand that we can fight back. And we will. You know, I hate to say the word ignorance because it sounds so horrible, but it's really not all that bad to be ignorant. Many of us are on many different subjects. But we should never be ignorant of the Constitution. Common law is easy. You know, if you're confronted in your private life by a situation, you know whether that situation is wrong or right. And so if your heart tells you that it's wrong, then I'll bet you it is. It's not constitutional. So if you knew the Constitution, you'd know it is. You were implanted before you were even born with what is right and what is wrong. And I'm betting that all of you go through every day making decisions based on what you know, what was implanted in you. And you will normally make the right decisions. You know you're not going to walk up and smack somebody because you know it's wrong. So if we listen to what we think and what our heart is telling us, we will live our life under common law, and we will live it by the Constitution. And if we live it by the Constitution, and we educate others on the Constitution, we can't go wrong. But we cannot say, okay, well, that's okay. We can live with that. If it's not constitutional, we cannot live with it. And we will not live with it. now. I've probably ranted long enough, but it's very important to me that we understand that if it is not constitutional, it is not right. And we will not accept compromises on it. And so when you go into the court as a courtroom observer, you go in there and you witness justice or injustice, and you report it. And it's based on whether it's constitutional or not. Any comments?
It is hard to disagree with you.
Well, you know, it's something that I've been pushing for a long time, and it makes me very unhappy when somebody says, well, we can compromise on this or we can compromise on that because it comes out okay. No. We are Americans. We're a proud nation. We are a free nation. And the only way we can keep it free is by holding on to our power and by abiding by the Constitution, which has kept us together all these years. Our Constitution is just as important right now today as it was when it was written. It is just as relevant. So
I have to agree with you completely and totally, Robert. And in a lot of ways, we're standing at 1775 or 6 right now. And we should not be taken in by these thoughts that just a little bit, like, for example, the statutes are pretty much like like the Constitution, so we can kind of go with the statute. That's what led us down the garden path to start with. Use the Constitution. It was put there for a purpose, and it was well thought out, and it does not need to be changed.
Very good. Now, does anybody else have anything they want to talk about as far as courtroom observing? We're not talking cases. We're talking courtroom observing now.
I think we should start going to the municipal courts, like the city courts, because it's probably the easiest court to, you know, make the impression. They're only dealing the ordinances, and it is only magistrate and the witness from the city corporation. And I've been here a few times over there. Those people are very easy to teach them and ask them some questions, you know. That's my opinion. And it's probably everybody can afford it because it's closest court it's closest to us, where we live.
Well, we need to be teaching anyone and everyone who is willing to listen, wherever we are, whatever the case may be. we need to bring this nation back to its founding ideals. We cannot do that through compromise. So, and now, I don't see Ollie here. So I have a little bit of an idea what he was going to talk about. When Ollie goes into a courtroom as an observer, he looks people in the eye, the judge, prosecutor, and he kind of gets a sense of where they're coming from, what kind of a person they are. But the biggest thing that he likes to do, if it's a jury trial, he pays a lot of attention to the jury. He looks at each one of them individually. He witnesses their facial expressions, the looks in their eyes. And he can kind of get a sense of what they're thinking. And it does help a lot to kind of know what the jury is thinking and you know, listen, you're listening to what the judge and the prosecutor are saying. Maybe there's a defense attorney. You're listening to what he or she is saying. But when you look a jurist in the eye, you can get a sense on whether they are believing what they're hearing or what's going on in their minds. And a lot of time, if you look them in the eye, you attract their attention. And their eyes will meet yours. And then you really get a sense of where they're coming from or what they're thinking. And it can make a big difference. But that's what Ollie was wanting to put out tonight, is pay attention to the jury. Don't lose track of the judge, the prosecutor, or anybody else that's speaking, but pay some attention to that jury. They can tell you a lot. Well, that's really all I have, unless somebody else has got something. Okay, if we don't have anything else, then I'm gonna say thank you all for being here. Thank you all for the conversation. Thank you for your report. I'm sorry I have so much trouble with your name.
Call me Val, V-A-L.
All right, Val. Thank you for your report. I appreciated it. And yes, Maria, even you. Thank you for your words, because this is how we can make the change that needs to be made, by discussing. Even if it gets heated, it's discussed, and we get the words out. Now, just like in a jury, the listeners make the decision. To make a decision, we need to be informed. We need to hear everything that's available to hear. So I thank everybody for being on the call. I really appreciate it.
Robert, can I ask a question before we go?
Yes.
I missed the first half of the call. It's Jan in Kansas. And I wondered, is the report on the amicus briefs or the friend of the court, is that going to be on the website?
Mr. Jan, what do you think?
The audio recording of what was said will be posted shortly.
Oh, okay. Good. I've never used that before, but, yeah, I can go to the library and do that. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. I look forward to seeing you all next week. Well, somebody have something?
I was just going to say that lady, does she know you have to call 3257 for the recording? But amen.
Well, she's,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we record every call and it's available to be listened to afterwards.
Okay, and that was 3257?
That's if you want to call in by phone. If you want to go to the website, you just go to the page and click on the appropriate date at the bottom with all the recordings, and it'll play it on a little recorder there for you. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jan.
Sure.
All right, I'm going to cut the recording and let's end it.